Good morning, everyone, and thank you so much for joining us for SPIRIT, the Stimulating Program Initiative for Retirees that Inspires Thought. I'm Judy Steinig, Senior Director of the OU's Department of Community Projects and Partnerships and Coordinator and Host for SPIRIT. The OU started SPIRIT several years ago as an on-site program, and now we're happy to provide it as an online program for baby boomers, empty nesters, retirees, not yet retirees, sandwich generation parents, and seniors, everyone who is looking for educational, intellectual, and spiritual growth. Since the beginning of the pandemic, SPIRIT continues to be a safe and ideal way for everyone to connect and learn together in a virtual setting. In today's program, you will hear the story of how one family's advocacy saved a wife, mom, and bubby after a stroke, and how to advocate for your loved ones or yourself. It is presented by my OU colleagues, Mimi Jankowitz and Maya Joyanda. Mimi Jankowitz is the National Director of Grassroots for Teach Coalition, a project of the OU. We were so honored to have her present for SPIRIT on the importance of voting last summer in 2020. After her mom had a stroke in June 2020, Mimi and her brothers found themselves advocating for their mom in the face of COVID hospital restrictions and a culture that believed that a 90-year-old woman could not recover. Maya Joyanda is a licensed medical social worker who has 10 years of experience working in hospitals, nursing homes, hospice residences, and in the home care setting. She earned her MSW from NYU with the focus on geriatric and medically compromised population. She currently works with the Teach Coalition as New Jersey Field Director. It is my honor and pleasure to turn the SPIRIT Forum over to Mimi Jankowitz and Maya Joyanda. Thank you everyone for joining us.
Hi everybody. Can you all see me? Because I'm just seeing a blank screen. Yeah, thank you, Debbie. I can see you. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here to share what we learned through this experience. So I have a feeling everyone on this call probably has a lot of their own experiences to contribute to the conversation. But I'm going to share what I know and have learned through this experience. So you know a little bit about me. I am, and if you know the Myers-Briggs personality system, I'm a campaigner, which means I'm an advocate at heart. I'm someone who's always been involved in PR, marketing, campaigns, getting out the word. Now I work for the OU getting legislation passed to help our schools. That's just my personality. I never thought that I'd have to do this for my mom. In fact, my mom is the one who always took care of us. Even into her 90s, my mom, I called her the ever ready battery. She just kept going because her mission was particularly to take care of dad. But you know, she would wake up at 3 a.m. with some intuition, something was wrong with somebody, and she would call and she was always right. So this is a woman who's dedicated to family. She also was super involved in the community. I'll show you her picture in a minute, but I just wanna say a couple things early on. My mom had a schematic stroke. She is not the strongest person physically. She's fallen quite a few times. So when she fell, I got a call from my dad's caretaker, said, your mom fell. I called the doctor. She said, don't bring her in because of COVID. Do not take her to the emergency room. This was on a Saturday morning. She said, bring her to me Monday morning and into the office and I'll see what she's doing. But mom kept getting worse and worse. And they checked again, no, bring her in Monday morning. And by the time mom showed up at the doctor's, she was completely paralyzed on her right side. Her face had fallen. And of course, Dr. Kennedy took one look at her and said, she needs to go to the hospital, she had a stroke. So the one thing I learned quickly about strokes is that early intervention is the key. Mom had missed the point where there's a drug you can take early on to avoid lots of it. But early intervention, intense therapy, all of that is very, very important. We know there's a concept that our brains are plastic. And even in your 90s, your brain can be rewired. It was very important for us to learn what intervention needed and to try to make that happen. Can you bring up the picture of my mom, please? Thanks, Maya.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so here's my mom before her stroke, and I'm sure each one of you has a loved one who you want to talk about. I want to tell you a couple other things about my mom. My mom is considered by everyone who knows her to be the nicest person in the world. Doesn't matter who it is, they will tell you, wow, your mom is the nicest person I've ever met. She is so sweet, so nice, even to the point where my daughter, when she'd get mad at me, would be saying, why can't you be nice like your mom? She's the nicest person in the world. Universal nice. And as I said before, completely and totally dedicated to our family and to particularly to my dad. She started a school for the Russian immigrants to St. Louis back in the 80s with her friends to teach them English and get them acclimated, which turned into a huge operation for all people coming, immigrants coming. So she's a very, very special person. And of course, like anyone, you want your loved one to get as better as possible. So before we go into the advocacy keys, I want to tell you, here we are in her milk kitchen, mom and I. And just so before you think, oh my God, poor Norma Baron, this is actually a picture of mom after. The one in the middle is her after the stroke, like a year later. And the other picture is her at a restaurant around the block, because her caretaker is so dedicated that every day she puts mom in her wheelchair. They go walk around and they see the flowers and dogs and talk to the neighbors. And then if it's a nice weather and mom's up to it, they go around the block and they have a drink or something to eat at the restaurant that's right around. She also goes once a week to get her nails done. I want to tell you, when I showed up at the hospital, I did not think I would ever see this day. So I'm going to get emotional, but it's really special that I could share this with you. And I'll share with you some of the things that we learned that helped my mom. There's four steps to advocating for your loved ones. First of all, before we even go into that, we're all Jewish here. And I just have to say, we all know that God runs the world. So we're going to have to make our hishtadlut, and God's going to take care of the results. But it's really important to work hard for your patient, for your loved one, because the forces in the world, in the hospital world, the medical world, the COVID world, are not necessarily there, particularly for our loved ones who are older. You know, our definition of what life means and what is value and that every second counts is not necessarily the thinking among medical professionals, among many people who think their idea of quality of life, whatever that is, allows for euthanasia in certain states and certain countries, all kinds of things. So we, advocating for our loved ones, particularly if they're older, it's a really important job, because we have to be their voice and make sure that they do it. The first thing that we had to do was, of course, the hospital wasn't very interested in keeping mom there. So they're like, you got to find her rehab or take her home. So the first two rehab places we contacted didn't want mom, not because of COVID. They didn't want her because they didn't think she was going to get better. And they have to have their, I guess, records showing that their patients are getting better. Thank God the third choice did not just accept mom, but they also had COVID visiting hours. And they were the only institution that we had found that had COVID visiting hours. So I was able to go see mom from 5 to 8. Now I live in Florida. My mom and dad are in St. Louis. And the first concern from my dad was, you can't fly. How are you going to get here? I don't want you bringing COVID from Florida. So my first advocacy was helping my dad get past his concerns and saying, Dad, you can't go to the hospital. You need me there. I'm the only sibling in America. My other ones are in Israel. So my husband and I drove. I don't even think he let me behind the wheel. We drove from Hollywood, Florida to St. Louis in one shot. We didn't go to any grocery stores. We brought our own food so we could honestly say to Dad, we didn't see and interact with people. We found out of the way rest stops. And when we got tired, we actually slept in the car for a couple hours at a rest stop. We didn't even go to a hotel. We were MS. But my goal was that we had to get to the rehab hospital. Mom had gone in the day before, and we had to get to the rehab hospital by 5 o'clock the next day in order for me to go visit my mom. So now I'm going to go through some of the steps that we went through. The number one thing is you have to work with your loved one to make sure they want to get better. If they don't, you're going to, you know, you need their cooperation. I'm sure everyone wants to get better. Not everyone can get better. In the case of my mom, when I walked in, not only was she happy to see me, she just said, home, I want to go home. I need to go take care of your dad. This was her priority, but knowing that she wanted to get better, and I said, Mom, you want to get better? She said, yes. I said, okay, I'm going to fight for you. We're going to fight for you. But what was our first step? Step number one is to make your loved one lovable. These people in the hospital, they have lots of patients. They're short-staffed during COVID. They don't know who your loved one is. And it's our job to personalize that. Make this someone that they care about so that they want to help the person. So this is what I call humanize your loved one. The first thing, and this I learned from my dad's caretaker, she handed me clothes and said, you need to take these clothes with you and tell them to start dressing your mom in real clothes. Thank you, Janetta. So I took a bag of clothes, two sets in case mom got dirty or something during the day, two outfits for the day and her own nightgown. And we all know, if any of us have been in the hospital, like nothing is worse than wearing that hospital nightgown when everything's hanging out the back and you feel like just terrible and so embarrassed. It's a terrible thing. So we got mom nightgowns. I actually ran over the next day and bought her a beautiful new nightgown so she looked beautiful. She made sure her hair was brushed, that her favorite was clean, like everything I could do to make her look like a lovable, amazing person. So that's hint number one. Then I shared stories with them about my mom, about how my mom's so nice, about how she's a fighter. My mom grew up in Northern Ontario. She had to hike through like 60 below weather to get to school. I said, my mom is a survivor. She survived that growing up. She's going to survive the stroke. You got to help me here. You got to help us. And then my mom, being my mom, would smile at everyone and say, thank you. Even though she could barely talk at that point, her face had fallen, she could barely talk, but she smiled at everyone and thanked them and told them how nice they were. That was really, really important because that made her lovable and human. Finally, I would bring them treats. I'd say, oh man, my mom, she loved chocolate. She wants you to have some. My mom loved to bake. My mom hated to bake, but I pretended she loved to bake. And she wanted, and I know she asked me if I could bring you cookies. Whatever it was, make her human. Flowers. I brought, you know, flowers came to the room. I'd say, you know, I'd give one set away and one for my mom. Like, let's just make her as human as possible, as lovable. And of course, I didn't put this up for her, but we all know to compliment people and thank them, even though you might be very upset that she's not getting the best treatment, but you got to thank everybody because everyone really is trying their best under the circumstances. I think this really helped tremendously, tremendously with my mom, particularly with the OT and the PT and the speech people, to just make her as human as possible and talk to them about her progress and just make her more and more real and human and as it would go along. Okay, can we go to the next slide? Get in the know. Well, I don't know anything about strokes prior to this situation. I knew people who had them, but I didn't really know what I needed to know. Thank God my brothers are like medical Google people. They are all over it. And they have always been the ones all over it. Whenever my dad or somebody would be sick, I would just rely on them to get all the information. So they are over in Israel researching and telling me what I should be asking, what I should be doing. But the key is you have to, don't take the doctor or the hospital or the nurse's information as the bottom line, that the only truth. You have to question, you have to ask the right questions. You have to be there to advocate for your family and to be able to stop the wrong treatments. So let me tell you what happened. My mom was alert. I had no idea she'd be so alert. She was great. I brought her an iPad. We watched a movie, one of her singing in the rain. It just made her so happy. So she was alert. Day one, she was alert. Day two, she was alert. Day three, my mom is asleep. She's like laying in the bed asleep. I said, what happened to my mom? She was so alert. She was sitting up. We were talking, like now she can barely say a word. What's going on? Oh, this is part of a stroke. This is what happens when people have strokes. She's just resting. I said, I don't know about that. I really don't know. This is not normal. But I took it for the day. The next day I showed up and mom was still a mess. I said, did you guys give her some new drugs? Like something is weird here. There's something wrong. Well, we don't know. We don't know. I said, I want to talk to the doctor. Finally, the doctor comes like 2 hours later. He shows up and I said, did you start giving my mom a new medicine or something? And he goes, oh yes, we give all of our patients, I don't know the name of the medicine anymore, but we give all of our patients X antidepressant, all of our stroke patients. I said, well, why would you do that? Have you looked to see what her, the impact is this on her? She was alert, now she's asleep. Why is that? Well, we, you know, and I know why that is, because they want to keep the patients quiet. They don't want them ringing the call button. They don't want them bugging them. So I said to him, and by the way, she's already on an antidepressant from her doctor. So this just put her over and she's sleeping. He said, well, what do you want me to do? I said, take her off. And he said, well, I can't, because once a patient's on these things, you can't just take them off. I said, well, this is just unacceptable. That's, I've never heard anything like this. And I said, how do, can I have her private doctor call you and take her off? And he said, that would work. So thank God, and this is, you'll see here, I have Dr. Kennedy and her partner on speed dial. And I just called Dr. Kennedy, told her what was going on. And she said, I'm on it. And she ordered him to take her off the medicine. But if I hadn't asked, if I hadn't said something's wrong here, like why would mom be recovering from the stroke and getting stronger and then suddenly be asleep? And that was why, because it was just standard. And I want you to know, the lady next door to her, who used to scream and yell and whatever, I don't know what was wrong with her, but they just, after a couple of days, they were done with it. And she was just, the whole rest of the time we were there, she was on drugs. I want to tell you something else. Out of 50 patients that were in the hospital, only 6 of them had visitors. The same visitors, the same 6 people every time, because I saw the sign-up list. Every day it was the same 6 people coming to visit the same 6 people. This made me really, really sad. And this is a point I'm gonna say, if you can go to the hospital, if you can get in there, if you could be there all the time, like have someone there all the time. Because if they're putting my mom to sleep, if they weren't changing her, I can't tell you that time I came in and found that they hadn't changed her for many hours. I found her another time just sitting in her chair. She'd been there many hours because nobody came to feed her. Nobody came to put her and then put her back to bed. If that's going on when I see that, imagine what's going on when we're not there. So that you know, I lived in Brazil for a few years, and there the policy is that you have to have someone staying with you who's a friend or a family. Or in the case of the Jewish community, they would assign somebody to stay with someone if they didn't have a family member. Stay with them. It's really, really important. And I know it's not always possible. I you know, if you can afford, if you can't be there 24/7, or you don't have family or friends or grandkids or other people who can help you, if you can't afford it and have a private person in there, I'd say do it. Because you just, the hospital staff, especially under COVID, are overwhelmed. And God forbid that these vaccine mandates have more people not being able to work, particularly in the hospitals. This could be a really terrible situation coming, I think the date is January 4th. Okay, so stand up for your loved one, don't be intimidated, and investigate everything being done. So I met with the OT, and the OT told me, your mom can't move her right side. And then maybe after 3-4 days after she was off the sleeping meds, I saw that my mom moved her right leg. I said, Mom, was that involuntary or did you move it? She goes, no, I moved it. So are you kidding me? She goes, I said, can you do it again? She moved her leg again. Well, I'm of course immediately on the phone to the hospital, in the hospital, but calling the OT on her phone number she gave me. She goes, that's not possible. It's an automatic reflex or whatever. And I'm like, no, I asked her if she could move it. She goes, I don't believe you, but I'll come over to see. She thought I was like making it up. She came over. I said, Mom, do you mind moving your leg for the OT, please? And she moved her leg. And suddenly my mom went from somebody she wasn't paying attention to, barely doing any therapy with, to someone that she started to really help. But if I hadn't seen that, if I hadn't been able to advocate for my mom, I don't know what would happen. Another time, the speech therapist decided that my mom wasn't going to make any progress either. And I saw she wasn't there, had been there for a couple of days. Again, I had to go through this all over again. So you have to speak up again and again, and you have to keep finding people. You know, of course, we all know speak with honey, but sometimes you can't speak with honey because they're not going to act if you don't ask for help. If you see on the bottom, I wrote, call the hospital ombudsman. Unfortunately, I can't tell you what happened anymore. Neither can my husband, neither can my brothers. We've all blanked on the incident. But whatever happened, it was bad. It was so bad that I called the hospital ombudsman. I said, I need help. This just is unacceptable. I think it was something with like no nursing care for hours and calling the call button, and mom was in a bad shape and I couldn't move her, and I didn't know, I was nervous to move her. I'm not a trained anything in this. So And I finally like went outside and grabbed somebody to come. I think it that might have been it. Whatever it was, I got an apology the next day from the ombudsman saying they'd taken care of the problem, it won't happen again. And I had to have to say, after I made that call, my mom got much better care. But what about all the other people in the hospital? If we're not there to advocate for our loved one, it's really, really tough. And I really believe that mom's improvement, you saw her picture, came from the fact that the hospital, we were watching them, we were on top of them, and they made sure to give her all the care that she was supposed to get, the OT, the PT, the speech therapist. Because you always have to be watching, and this is painful. But you know what? Our hospitals don't always have the same priorities and interests. I think the caregivers do, but I will tell you from what I saw this time and what I've seen other times, they are, somebody just mentioned to call the chaplain. Thank you very much. That's a great point. And I did not call the chaplain in this case, but I think it was a Catholic church it was a Catholic hospital, so it might have been why I didn't call, but it probably doesn't matter. They could have helped anyway. So thank you for mentioning that. But hospitals have other priorities and interests. They have a bottom line. They want their patients not to be dying in the hospital. They want to be able to say everybody left, you know, healthy and better, et cetera, et cetera. One of the most profitable industries since COVID has been hospitals. Okay. Like the medical industry has done really well during COVID. It's hard to imagine, but they, you know, Pfizer, Hospital Corps, they're thriving. So they have their own bottom lines. The hospital staff cares deeply, but these people are stretched beyond stretch. Thank you. She mentioned they probably have Jewish capitals available on request, I'm sure. And thank you very much. It's a really great point. And we'll add that to this. Hospitals have these other priorities, and that still trickles down to the staff. Now, one of the things that this hospital did is you never got the same nurse and person twice. They would just, you know, if you finally have found someone who loved my mom and who was great and we had a great rapport, like they might move them down the hall or move them to the other side and you wouldn't see them again. To me, you know, what makes the most sense? Have the same people helping the same people for the week. Save a commitment and for your family. I mentioned before the Jewish definition of quality of life. Seniors are not necessarily the top priority because they're thinking this woman's not going to get better. This man's not going to get better. Okay, it's just the reality of it. At 91, what kind of life do they have? She already had dementia. She already was weak. Whatever it is that the non-Jewish world has this quality of life issue that they accept euthanasia as a reality, which we don't as Jews. We believe that every breath is meaningful and every moment is meaningful. My mom, all she would say every day, home, home. Anyone would call, home, I want to go home. She looked at me one day, she goes, your dad's really funny. I said, I know, mom. She goes, and I'm his best audience. He needs me. Okay, so the fact that she felt needed and we reinforced that idea and we shared that with the hospital was really important, that this is not a woman just because she's 91 and had a stroke, you know, can't really move her right side. Like, this is not a woman to overlook. She's contributes to all of us. And it's really, really important to have our quality of life in mind so that we can explain that to the hospital. Be your loved one's call button. I can't tell you how many times we press call, 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 and nothing happened. Sometimes you have to just go right out there and get the person. Our call button didn't have the capacity to talk. You know, some of them do. You can say, oh, I fell out of bed. Some of them do, some of them don't. This particular, we couldn't talk. So we had to go out. Thank God she was right by the nurse's station. It wasn't really so challenging. But sometimes I'd go there and there was nobody there. They were busy. They were out. I actually found the lounge once and grabbed somebody. I mean, I'm aggressive when it comes to taking care of my loved ones and particularly my mom. And you should be too. Don't take no for an answer. Okay, so when it comes, we're going to advocate with Hashem in a minute, but I wanted to add one other thing. The hospital did have a post-care worker, and we also advocated with him. It was very important to have a plan for what we're going to do when we get mom home. We knew we had to get care for her, and my dad had his caretaker evening and night, but they couldn't take care of mom in this condition. And she said to me, I need my own caretakers. That's one thing I need is my own caretakers. Well, my dad's like, do whatever you need to do, spare no cost, find whoever you need to find. I was like, thank you, dad. But the hospital says, oh, we're gonna get you a bed, we're gonna get you a wheelchair, all this stuff. But if we hadn't stayed on top of that man, lovely guy, but if we hadn't stayed on top of him, then he went on vacation, somebody filled in, we would not have had a hospital bed. We would have not gotten a wheelchair. And let me tell you, they told me, we're sending you a brand new hospital bed for your mom. They sent a bed that I think was in a 1940s prison. It was so old, so disgusting, so terrible that even once I got home, I had to still advocate with the hospital, say like, okay, you sent me something like from a prison you probably was probably closed a long time ago. Like, we need a real bed. And they didn't, it wasn't even electronic. It still had the crank business going on. It was a really old bed with like stickers on it. It was just a mess. So you have to stay on top of this. And you have every right to your, if it's Medicare paying for it, if it's you're paying for it privately, if it's your secondary insurance, you're paying for this one way or the other. You have to always stand up and look out for your loved ones. My heart breaks every time I think of those other people in the hospital, every time I think of people who are alone and that don't have someone like us to stand up for them. Okay, so now we're gonna go. The final piece of the advocacy is with Hashem. We can do all our hashalut with the hospitals, with the caretakers, with the doctors, stand up, we can speak, we can encourage our loved one, but there's nothing in the world without Hashem. So Hashem is a true healer. We have to pray, we have to get people to pray for our loved ones. And I believe me, I'm sure that had a lot to do also with my mom's recovery. We have friends all over the world and family and our own prayers. It's so important. I know each one of you know what I mean. Okay, and there's an important concept that I hear every year at Rosh Hashanah, that if you're needed in the world, God will put you in the book of life. If somebody needs you, plead their case with Hashem. Hashem, I need my mom. I need my husband. I need my kid. I need my sister, my best friend, whoever it is. I need this person. Talk to him about all the great things that they do for you, for everyone else. But really plead their case. It's great to say to him, but it's really important for us to take that time to talk to God in His own world, because I really believe that that helps. And finally, I want to say to please daven for yourself. As the caregiver, even if you're splitting this with your siblings or your spouse or other family members, you have to take care of yourself. And you need heavenly help to make the right decisions, to advocate, to stand up for your loved one. You really need help. I know how hard it is. Those 2 weeks being with my mom in the hospital, I was exhausted afterward. I'd had to do that once for my husband when he had cancer, but this was a whole nother level because my husband was strong and he was a strong guy. This was my mom and I had to be her voice. I had to be her eyes. And it's exhausting, as you all know, but you feel, I mean, when you know you're doing the right thing, that you get invigorated. But daven for yourself that you have the siyata shemaya, that you have the energy, you have the love, you have the compassion, you have compassion for the people who are trying to help you with your mom or your loved one, whoever that is. I know that that was really, really important for me. And I had several conversations with the care, with the people in the hospital, because many of them were God-fearing people. And we talked a lot about God. I would give them blessings. I would bless them. Thank you for taking care of my mom. God should bless you. They really appreciated it. And I think if you're in this caregiving profession, you really do see the hand of God very often. And these people, I think that helped to endear my mom to them as well. Can you go to the next slide? So this is what I want to show you. Now, I know not everyone has these happy outcomes, but here my parents are. This past summer, my dad turned 94. They're out in front of their house. Both my dad's on his walker chair. My mom's in her wheelchair. And I want to show you this picture with Kevin, my dad's main caretaker, and Dee, that these people advocated as hard for mom and for my dad as possible. They're part of our family now. And if you can make that happen, if you can get help, it's a game changer, particularly if you're not there. But you know, we're partners in making sure that mom gets to the doctor and gets the right treatments, and dad, et cetera. It's really, really important to try to put people around you, be it siblings, caretakers, doctors, to build a team through your advocacy, to build a really great team around you to help take care of your loved one. On that note, I'm going to turn it over to the professional, but I want to give everyone here a bracha to tell you that I think we saw a Nisim with my mom. She got to the hospital 2 days after she had her stroke because of COVID. And yet she had a pretty good recovery. She is completely uses her left side now. I've never seen anything like it. She was always a righty. Now she feeds herself, brushes her hair, washes her face, does what, you know, does what she needs with her left hand. She can move her left foot. She can stand now because her right, they are always doing exercises with her right foot so that she can stand. That may be 10 seconds, 30 seconds. She can't walk, but she can stand. And when she first had her stroke, that left arm, her right arm was kind of stuck up in the air. I don't know how to explain it. It was like her hand was up near her neck and it was stuck. And because of the tremendous early intervention with the in the hospital, and then afterwards we had people coming from the Medicare, and then we actually ended up hiring our own, dad hired our own. So it's really, really important. See, this is an important thing. What if you don't do lung care and you can't afford paying for a caregiver? That's one of the points that Judy and I have been discussing. How can we, what kind of things can we help in the community? This is a really big issue. I'm not a professional. I'm just one person, one advocate type, one mom, one daughter, one wife, and one servant of Hashem. So I'm going to turn it over to Maya because that's exactly where she can help you out. And I want to give all of you a bracha that as you take care of your loved ones, Hashem should give you the strength. You should see Nisim and you should get the help you need either in the hospital or at home to take care of the person you love and see a recovery and an opportunity to spend more beautiful moments together and nachas and simcha for them and for you.
Thank you so much, Mimi. So hi, my name is Maya, and I currently work for Teach Coalition, but prior to my current position, for 10 years, I was a medical social worker. So I worked in the hospice setting, in hospitals, hospice residences, and in the home, in the patient's home, as well as working as a discharge planner in a nursing home and rehab, and also on a dialysis unit in the hospital. So I just hope to be able to give you some perspective on what I've seen in my work and how to become your own best expert. And that's really what I hope to be able to help you take away from this today. Not only advocating for your loved ones, but also planning for the future. So I wanna be able to focus on both. The first thing I'm going to go over is planning for the worst. I always say we hope for the best, but plan for the worst. And I'm going to go over what exactly that means. The second thing is navigating the healthcare system, how to best communicate with the professionals there, what everything means, how you can best advocate for your loved one while they're actually being cared for in a hospital, rehab, or home care setting. And then the last thing is going to be when and how to reach out for help. The best ways to do that, and who are going to be your best advocates, who's going to be the best person to help you when you cannot no longer, you know, do for yourself, because we're all limited in what we're able to do. So the first thing is planning for the worst. So we never want to think that, God forbid, something bad can happen to us, but we also don't want to wait for a crisis to happen to begin thinking about what we would do. The worst thing that we can do for our loved ones, whether that's for our children, our spouse, anyone, we really don't want to add stress to them already. If, God forbid, a crisis were to happen, we want them to be as prepared as possible, and we want to be prepared as possible if it was on us to care for a loved one. So we don't want to wait for a crisis. So what can we do? The first thing is find a healthcare proxy. A healthcare proxy is someone who is able to speak on your behalf in terms of your health care. So if you are no longer able to advocate for yourself or say, this is what I want, you know, most of us have the ability to walk into a doctor's office, be presented with treatment options and say, this is what I want. But unfortunately, there are situations where we're not able to speak for ourselves. So we want to be able to appoint someone. And I always say plus one. You know, there are people, you know, all of us, we take vacation. We're not answering our phone right away. We just never know what could happen. So I say find a proxy and then an alternate. It's called a healthcare proxy alternate, who's kind of like the backup. And once you have found, you know, it takes a lot of thought, as, you know, does a lot of things when it comes to this. Think about who you would want to be your advocate. and then engage them in tough conversations. We know these are not dinner table conversations that we have all the time. We're not talking about feeding tubes and resuscitation at the dinner table with our loved ones. These are tough and uncomfortable conversations, but they are conversations that really should be had. So if you have not had these conversations with, let's say, a parent or an aunt or uncle about their care, now is really the best time to do that before anything happens and we're kind of scrambling to figure out what would they want us to do. So that's a big piece of making sure that your needs are known. Make sure you are clear and understood. So it's not so much you want people that have the same values as you possibly, but you really want to make sure it's someone who's truly speaking as if they were you, not what they would choose for you, but what you would choose for yourself, and have them speak on your behalf. Or if you're caring for a parent and they have, you know, certain wishes, it may not be what you wish for them, you know, because maybe that's tough. Let's say they're saying, you know, they don't want to be resuscitated in an instance, let's say they went into cardiac arrest, their heart stops beating. And we, you know, we want to do everything we can do for our parent. But let's say someone has chosen not to be resuscitated. It is our job and our duty as the healthcare proxy to speak on their behalf, not what we would want, but what they would want. So just make sure you are very clear and understood. Make sure you're talking about feeding tube. You know, there's a wide range of opinions on that. I'm not here to give medical opinion, but make sure you're clear. If you need to speak to your RUV, you need to speak to your primary care physician. Make sure you know really the ins and outs of what a feeding tube means and things that can arise from that. DNR versus CPR, which I touched on. DNR stands for do not resuscitate. So like I said, someone's heart stops beating. A DNR would mean do not resuscitate. Do not perform CPR on that person, or they can choose CPR, that if, God forbid, they went into cardiac arrest, the medical professional would perform CPR. Maybe living at home versus in a residence. All these things should be discussed. Pain management, how would they like pain management to be handled? Or maybe someone wants all necessary measures to keep them alive. Maybe they want that to happen. All these need to be very clear. And of course, make updates as needed. I can't tell you how many times I'll, you know, have an opinion about something, but then I hear a close friend went through something similar and I see what she went through. I'm thinking, you know what? I'm not really sure that's what I wanted for myself or for my loved one. And you make updates. Things change. You know, your health may change. Things that were true a year ago might not be true now. So make updates and make sure that you continue that conversation and that your healthcare proxy is aware of these wishes. The next thing you want to do is put it in writing. Absolutely. Do not skip this part because, like I said, things can get lost in translation. Maybe they meant X. Maybe I understood they used this word, maybe it meant this. So again, with a healthcare proxy, you wanna put that in writing. You want to be sure that there's a form called a healthcare proxy form. They are listed with their address, phone number, cell phone, email, Facebook name, whatever it is, any way to get in touch with these people, because when the medical staff is looking for who to turn to, you know, before they start, you know, administering treatment, they're going to be finding these people that you have assigned already to speak on your behalf. I should also point out before I go to the next forms that are ways to put your wishes in writing is where to keep this. These are traveling forms. So yes, your primary MD should absolutely have a copy of this. But let's say, God forbid, someone is at home and someone needs to call an ambulance because there's been a medical emergency. It could be the middle of the night. We can't get in touch with the doctor's office. So where are we keeping these forms? The best place to keep these forms where the EMS team Hatsala, where they will find it, is either on the bedside by the end table, or even you can put a push pin and pin it to the wall, or on your fridge with a magnet. These are the best places, and these are the first places that the EMS team will be looking for this and will know, okay, they don't want CPR administered, so don't do that, or they do want CPR administered. They will have a blueprint of what to do or who to call in an emergency like that. The next thing is the MULST and PULSED. So the Molson Pulse are identical forms. It just depends on what state you are living in. So the MULS stands for Medical Order for Life-Sustaining Treatment, and PULSED is Physician Order for Life-Sustaining Treatment. Like I said, they're identical, but MULS is for New York, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island, Ohio, and Maryland, and PULSED is recognized in 46 states, including New Jersey. So it just depends where you are, what it's called, but your physician can provide you with this form as well to the healthcare proxy form. And it can be something that's filled out and signed on the spot. It does not take a lot of time. The discussions prior take time, but the actual having your physician sign it, which is necessary for the Molson Pulse, it must be signed by a physician, that can be done in the office. A living will is loosely defined as a will while you are still alive. So we all know about the will. When, God forbid, someone passes away, we find out what their wishes were once they have passed. A living will is what your wishes are while you are still living. So that can go much into further detail beyond the healthcare proxy and the Molson Pulse into further details that are not specified in the Molson Pulse. So the Molson Pulse will go over DNR versus CPR, feeding tube, and hospitalization. Hospitalization, you know, when someone is very medically fragile or older, a simple ambulance ride or stay in the hospital can be very, very taxing. And so someone may decide at one point to sign a do not hospital order, which will be indicated in the Molson Pulse, or that they do want to be sent to the hospital. But that's something to be discussed as well. At what point does your loved one or you no longer want to be sent to the hospital and really just focus on care at home? So the living will go even beyond that. It can go into, you know, maybe they don't want to go to a nursing home. You know, maybe they would prefer to have aides at home. That's something that should be discussed and identified in the living will. It can go into much, much further detail about healthcare proxies. You can list other family members who to turn to if those two people either they're no longer available or willing. You can go into further detail about who to turn to. And that's something that can be done by an estate attorney. It does cost money to have that written up, but it's very, very important because there are a lot of nuances to different healthcare decisions that you would want laid out beyond the Molson Pulse. So we just spoke about how to plan for the future, how to protect ourselves, our families from that stress that, you know, in the moment of a crisis. But now let's talk about, now let's say you have a loved one in a hospital or a rehab, how are you going to now navigate this? How are we going to go through this? So in my time in the nursing homes and hospitals, we always say discharge planning begins at the time of admission. So the moment that your loved one is admitted, the staff is already planning and trying to come up with ways for a safe discharge home. I'm not saying they're looking to kick anyone out, but it is in their best interest to make sure that this person is being sent home at the moment that it is considered safe and at that moment, not beyond, not I need a few more days. They really are looking for the fastest exit possible while keeping in line with safety and all of that. So the first thing you want to do if, God forbid, a loved one is sent to the hospital or is in a rehab, you want to inform the primary MD. He or she is going to be your biggest advocate in terms of medical care. He has access to people that the rest of us in the community may not have access to, or at least not as quickly as we would like to. So if they will call the hospital and say, I need to speak to the surgeon ASAP, that doctor is going to get in a lot faster than we would. And also he should just be kept in the loop. He knows the medications that your loved one is on. He knows, you know, this doesn't sound right. This doesn't sound like your mom. This doesn't sound like your dad usually acts. He really knows, or she really knows, what's going on, what they look like in the office versus how they're looking now. A doctor can also come to the hospital and make a visit there. So that is all very, very helpful to have that person on your side and be in the loop of what's going on. You also want to start looking into options. So are you thinking about rehab? What medications is your loved one going to have to be on? What does insurance cover? That's a big one. You want to definitely start calling your insurance and seeing what the coverage looks like. So you're not, you know, hit with a crazy bill and say, oh, well, I had no idea. You know, my parents always said they had great coverage, but now we're kind of stuck, or now we're left with a bill that we can't pay. So you really want to start looking into all the options and figuring out what will work best, you know, and not becoming more of a burden. Mimi touched on this also, you know, COVID-19 added a lot of complications to hospital stays and rehab stays. There's usually a limit on the number of people that can visit at one time. So if you can start a rotation with family members, if they're only allowing one or two family members at a time to visit, make sure that you're, you know, not only for, you know, advocating, but also quality of life. You want your loved one to feel cared for. You want them to feel like people are checking on them, even just having the visits and having conversations. The nurses don't have the time to sit with your loved one and have a conversation. You know, they're very busy. Hospitals are understaffed right now. They're very overwhelmed. They're not able to sit like we would like them to. So make sure that there is a rotation of family coming in and checking, not just, you know, on the advocacy piece, but also just giving your loved one that reassurance. And also do your research. And Mimi touched on this as well. You know, look up, you know, I always say, don't let Google be your doctor. Don't start diagnosing based on Google, but you want to start doing your research. Talk to people who have gone through this. Do you have a friend whose parent went through something similar? Do you have people in the community who are able to be a resource to you? Really look into what's going on, especially if something is feeling off. And then you know, this is something I need to speak up about. Or you can get that reassurance like, oh, this is something that, you know, is typically, this is how, you know, this complication can look like. You're able to be more informed. So we just talked about hospitals and rehabs, but the home care setting is a little different. Like I said, you wanna get to know your coverage. Insurance coverage can be really, really difficult in terms of finding caregivers for the home or medical equipment that might be needed at home. I know when I was working in discharge planning, you know, a patient of mine had just ordered a wheelchair, but now they need, you know, prior to their admission, but now they needed another specialized kind, and the insurance said, I'm sorry, you only get one wheelchair. So it really added such a burden on the family in terms of, you know, the financial piece. So make sure you're, you know, don't make assumptions, you know, make sure you're talking with your insurance. Maybe they just need authorization from the physician. It's usually, you know, a big piece of it is getting the physician involved. So really get to know what the coverage looks like. And the next thing is secure a reputable caregiver. So you want to make sure that not only are you getting someone that's trustworthy, loving, and will be caring to your loved one, but make sure they're also not, you know, gorging the price. You want to get a few quotes. You want to hear from people. I really believe in asking around. Find people, maybe someone know someone that is looking for work. I know with my own grandmother, when we were looking for an aide for her, my mother was put in touch with someone that used this other caregiver who was lovely, and her mother unfortunately had passed away and no longer needed her. So we were able to hire her for my grandmother, and she's been amazing. So I really feel, you know, similar to when we were in that, you know, I'm in that now, you know, when we have young children and we want a babysitter, you know, you're asking around, you know, who's good. You know, when you're in this stage, ask your friends, you know, who are you using? What's an agency that's reputable? Really ask around and make sure that you're getting someone that you can trust, but also is being fair in terms of price. The next thing is get your home into shape. There is a lot of change that happens when someone who was in a medical crisis returns home for care. Things are gonna look very different. There's equipment that's needed, a hospital bed. It could be bars in the shower, maybe a seat in the shower. It could be moving furniture around, making sure there's no tripping hazards, no loose rugs. Try to find, you know, ways to make the home safer so that it can be a safe situation that's long lasting. Maybe there's a lot of stairs. Maybe there's stairs outside. You need to put a stair lift in the home, a ramp, all these things. Some of these can be covered by insurance, by the way. So it's something that you should be looking into as well. The discharge planner from the rehab or hospital should be assisting with this as well. But these are all things you should be asking about and make sure that you're advocating for. The next thing is enlist your family. So like I said, you want to really make sure that if there's a rotation needed, maybe someone, you know, this can be really overwhelming for a family, especially when There's not many siblings or people live far. This is a huge change in the family dynamic. So even assigning small tasks, like this person is going to go food shopping every Sunday for this person, or this person is going to visit. This person is going to make sure that the bills are being paid or the medication is being filled. You know, so it's not all on one person. Really try to enlist the family to become more involved, so it's not all falling on you. And so that, you know, they feel like you have a real team working together. And the last thing with this is adjusting. If things are very different, not like they were, if you adjust with it, your loved one is likely to be able to adjust well as well. It can be really jarring, you know, to have a beautiful living room that you decorated and then all of a sudden you have a hospital bed in the middle of it. You know, that's not exactly how you pictured your home. So really just try to adjust as best you can, knowing that this is what, you know, if this is what your loved one wanted, you know, just keeping that in mind as best you can. We know it's difficult. It is not simple to get everything into the home, especially if it's tight quarters. So really just doing your best to go with the flow, you know, as difficult as this is. So we talked about, you know, what we can do, how we can plan, how we can advocate in the moment, but sometimes things are really just out of our scope. What can we do? So definitely ask for backup. So contact any specialist that maybe you have worked with. Maybe your parent has already been seeing a cardiologist and they can give, you know, a better light than the primary MD would. Connect with family members. You know, I always say you got to have like someone in every profession in your family because, you know, they're really a source of knowledge. So if there's family members that maybe they've worked in a hospital or they work in a medical supply company and they would know, you know, the best place to go to. Even if it's like a distant cousin, I always say, you know, forget the embarrassment, forget feeling shy. You really gotta connect with these people so that you can better care. And, you know, you just never know. I always say, you never know. Don't be shy. Go for it. Connect with who you can. And the same goes true for friends, community members, colleagues. I can't tell you how many times I've spoken to colleagues when, you know, we were going through things with my grandmother, because we are in the medical field and I'm limited in my knowledge and maybe someone else has seen something else. And sure enough, I was able to find out more information. You really just never know. It never hurts to share. Really, it can have wonderful, wonderful results. And I think it's very helpful. One thing I didn't put up here is using social media also to your advantage. I see many times people posting on these groups, you know, whether that's a shul groups or community groups or just a, you know, Jewish moms group. Try to find groups that you can join that are knowledgeable in this. There might be a caregiving group, you know, for elderly parents or, you know, a group special to a certain disease. You just never know what's out there, and the support, people who have been through this, not only is good for you, you know, we don't want to cause any caregiver burnout here. You know, the best thing you can do is reach out to people that have been through this before, get support from them, get information from them. That is really going to be your best source of information when you really feel like you've exhausted everything else. So that's, you know, that's really, you know, my takeaways from this. I don't know if anyone has any questions. You can feel free to put it in the chat box. It'll go directly to the host.
Okay. Thank you so much. I think you both did an amazing job. Gave us so, you know, Mimi, to give us the personal perspective that I think everybody can absolutely identify with. There have been a couple of comments. There's one question. Most are not questions, most are comments, and the ones that are appropriate, I will bring over. But there was one question, I guess, Maya, this would be for you. If someone does not have a proxy, they just, you know, it can happen at any point in time, I think we've seen in COVID, what are the legalities for state to state? Is there a general, what would happen if somebody doesn't have anything in place?
So what generally happens is there's an order of next of kin. So what usually, at least in New York and New Jersey, what I have seen, it goes spouse to children and then parents, and then it goes from there. You know, if there's a distant cousin, if there's, you know, it kind of just goes down the line. But the order is spouse, children, and then parent. So that's the order that I have seen in New York and New Jersey.
And they make the decision, you're saying?
In terms of being the decision maker. So if someone has a spouse that is able to speak on their behalf, the decision making would be turned to them automatically. Unless there is a way that you can prove that you have had conversations with your loved one about this certain issue. But it gets tricky. And, you know, hospitals have and rehabs have ethics committees. And I have been on cases where it does not look like some family members have the best interests, but it's in their hands. And it gets very, very dicey. And you just don't want to put yourself or your loved one in that position. So the sooner that you can put it in writing, the better it will be. You just want to save stress and fighting within families as much as possible.
Okay, thank you. Okay, and if there's any questions, as I said, put them in the chat, but I'm going to go through some of the comments. Someone wrote that when his father had a stroke and was admitted to the hospital, the family put up a photo and bio of the individual so that everybody could see that this person was a rabbi, a professor, you know, and I think it probably made him a much more, you know, actual person that they could all identify with. And it was somebody who wanted to get help to, you know. So I think that's a wonderful idea. Somebody else was indicating that one can hire, some of these comments are at various points with both of your discussions. Somebody was saying to hire a patient advocate, that can also be done. We have an individual who is a chaplain on this, and the comment was, it's the suggestion obviously to call upon the chaplain to visit if a family member can't, they make certainly great advocates for loved ones, absolutely. Many institutions have Jewish chaplains available. Also, there's a comment about the call button, that it should not be shut off until the request is filled. So that's, I think, something we all know. And then somebody else was saying a risk manager is also a person that could be involved. And suggestions.
Yeah, I should add that if there are no family members that can help you, you know, form this team, find professionals who can. If you can afford it, I am a big advocate in these professionals that are, you know, able to help you manage appointments, or even bring a loved one to an appointment, help you manage the medications. There's a lot of juggling and a lot of pieces to caregiving. So it's very important that it's not all on you. It's really very, very difficult to be able to handle it all on your own. And if you don't have family, find professionals that do specialize in this.
I want to add on that point that there's a number of Jewish organizations that do health advocacy. We've probably all heard of Rabbi Fear, is that how I say it? There's RCHSS. There's many, many organizations, particularly in New York, New Jersey area, where the Bicker Hillel Society, they'll advocate for you, they'll help you. They help arrange care, getting the right doctors, going through the diagnosis. So there's many Jewish organizations, and there's also just regular organizations. I know of one that will come to your house and make sure that it's all set up for your loved one if they have dementia, Alzheimer's, or if they're coming home from the hospital. Everything she said, the loose rugs, the whatever. We had somebody come into our house. It was really, really helpful to do that. And that was from a nonprofit organization. So there are a lot of resources in a lot of areas, not necessarily Jewish, that we should remember to call on.
Okay, there was a request to put it in the chat, but I'm going to actually say not in the chat because we'll lose the chat after the program. If you could even any of these materials give us, and we'll send it out with the recording if you have any of the contact info. Somebody else made a suggestion about long-term care. Obviously, that's something that people have to get on sooner rather than later because you might not be able to qualify. So it's, you know, if somebody's in their 80s, they probably cannot already get it or would be absolutely not affordable. Okay, one other thing. Oh, when you mentioned about getting your home into shape, I can tell everybody who might not have been with us a year ago that we covered that, Faggy, and it's in our archives. Faggy Horowitz spoke about getting your home in shape so that you should be able to age at home. So that's the, I think it was about a year ago in November. So that is in our archives. Also, Susan Mattel did a two-part program at the end of last summer, also about safety at home. So these are all things that the details are in our archives. Okay, I think that's about it. Okay, you know, there are a few other comments that people have made, but not are all appropriate for us to discuss at this time. So I don't see anything else. I want to thank you both so much. This was so helpful. And as I said, any of the resources that you can give us, we'll be able to send out later when everybody gets the recording. So I just want to remind everybody, we'll be back next week with our EVP and COO of the Orthodox Union, Rabbi Dr. Josh Joseph. And he's going to be speaking on the one thing you can't get rid of by losing it, Moshe Rabbeinu and the challenge of anger management. So I think that's something that that everybody identifies with. So you'll be seeing the registration with your recording. And of course, you know, we also send out other other emails during the week. And of course, definitely you want to, I'm sure, visit the archives because we are archived, I think, through the end of the summer. This session and the ones in the past few weeks will be archived in another couple of weeks. So thank you so much, everybody. Wait, I see two more things in the chat. Just compliments and thank yous. Okay, so everybody have a great day. Have a good week. And is it too early to wish everybody a good Shabbos? So everybody be safe, be healthy, and look forward to seeing you back next week.
Thank you so much.